Hello there, I'm Nick Brownlee, and you're listening to Nick Brownlee's Newsletter Podcast Edition. And yes, we've defied the cynics and the naysayers and stuck it to the gloomsters and doomsters, or whatever it is that Pillock says, by reaching episode 2. They said it couldn't be done, but the proof is right here in your earphones. My thanks to everyone who's taken the time to say how much they enjoyed episode 1. You're clearly easily pleased. But now the pressure's on, because as a wise man once said, you're only as good as your next episode. In which case, let's get on with it, eh? And as ever, I thought we'd start this week with some of your correspondence and a lot of feedback about my interview with Clefton Twain, president of the Bemusers Appreciation Society. If you recall, he was launching a legal battle against the producers of the James Bond film No Time to Die. Clefton wants to replace the current theme tune by Billie Eilish with a Bemusers song entitled Man of Fruit. Well, Nancy Downing of Castleford, West Yorkshire, has written to say, "Just got back from the Bond film, fell asleep during the theme song, woke up in time for the closing credits. Can anyone tell me what happens and if it was any good?" Well, I don't want to spoil it for you, Nancy, but in answer to your questions, he dies, and disappointing. Frank Lomax of Godalming has been in touch, and he says, "I don't know who Billie Eilish is, but on this evidence he's not fit to hold a candle to previous singers of Bond themes like Matt Monro, Shirley Bassey and Nancy Sinatra. That said, the Madonna one was a pile of shit, but you take my point." And Frank adds a PS, "Now that I think about it, the Duran Duran one was a pile of shit too." Well, thanks for that, Frank. And in fact, there's been a lot of discussion among listeners to Nick Brownlee's newsletter podcast version about which is the best Bond theme. Macca J of North Shields says, "There was one a few years ago that was quite good. Can't remember the film, but I heard it on Ken Bruce the other day and seem to recall enjoying it." Well, I was listening as well, Macca, and I can't remember it either. Hi to Rajiv Khan of Kennington in London, who's written to say, "Carly Simon singing Nobody Does It Better from The Spy Who Loved Me in 1976 always takes me back to a happier time before my drinking took over." And finally, Miriam O'Connell of County Mayo has contacted the show with her suggestion for who should be the next James Bond. And she says simply, "Martin Clunes." Well, if you want to write to the show, it's really simple. You can find the details in the show notes, and I look forward to hearing from you. There'll be more of your correspondence later in the show, but now, this. Yeah, thank you, and welcome to Loose Men, the first in a new series here on Nick Brownlee's newsletter, podcast version, in which we are asking ordinary blokes to tell us what's on their minds and what's really going on in their lives. Yes, we're stripping away the barroom banter and the macho posturing to get to the heart of the issues that really matter to men in 2021. So without further ado, let's introduce today's panel. First up, Barry Jopling. Barry is 48 and a window cleaner from Liverpool. He's married to Olive, has two teenage sons, and is an Everton FC season ticket holder. And when he's not cheering on the Toffees, Barry's interests include snooker, DIY, and Indian food. Welcome, Barry. Next to Barry is Clive Barraclough, who is a 48-year-old car salesman from Staines in Surrey. Divorced, but with two teenage sons, Clive is a season ticket holder at Gillingham Town FC, and his interests include snooker, DIY, and Indian food. Clive, thanks for joining us. And last but not least, Kenny Montrose. Kenny is 48 and a team leader at a call centre in Glasgow. Kenny's married to Rena and they have two teenage sons. His interests include snooker, DIY and Indian food. Let's have a round of applause, please, for this week's Loose Men. Right, guys, I thought we'd kick off with a general discussion about something which affects an awful lot of men, but which, for some reason, doesn't seem to get the coverage it maybe deserves, and that's the subject of expressing your feelings. Now, this has been in the news recently thanks to TV celebrity Rylan Clark Neal, who has revealed that he got over his divorce from his husband Dan earlier this year by expressing his feelings to his best friend Claire Richards, singer with the band Steps. At the recent Attitude Awards, a clearly emotional Rylan said, "Over the past 4 months, probably for the toughest time in my life, she's been there for me, and without her, I probably wouldn't be giving out this award tonight." So what do we think about this, guys? Expressing his feelings clearly worked for Ryland, but do you have a best friend you can confide in? Okay, maybe let's put it another way. What are the feelings that men tend to suppress, do you think? I'm thinking maybe depression, worries about money perhaps, family. Where you fit in the modern world? Any thoughts? Kenny, do you have any feelings that maybe you've been keeping under your hat for too long?
No, really, no.
Okay, Clive, you're divorced, sadly, but when you were going through the split with your wife, was there anyone that you could turn to express your feelings on the matter? Clive's shaking his head there, okay. Barry, what about you? Do you have any problems expressing your feelings?
No, I'm all right.
Okay, let's maybe then open it out to the audience. We do, of course, have an all-male audience here at Loose Men. Guys, let's have a show of hands. Who among you struggles to express your feelings? And, yeah, nobody, it seems. Well, that's interesting. Well, we're going to take a break now. When Loose Men returns, we'll be talking snooker with Ronnie O'Sullivan. DIY with Tommy Walsh. And Vinnie Jones will be revealing the secrets of making the perfect chicken vindaloo.
Go, Vinnie, my son, go!
Don't go away. Back soon.
Who the hell is Ryland Clark Neal?
According to my database, he is a carbon-based life form with a very strange beard.
And?
That is it.
He's famous for having a very strange beard.
Apparently so.
But he must have done something else to achieve his fame.
According to my database, he appeared out of nowhere. And none of the carbon-based life forms know how or why.
But what does he do, Brian?
Computing. Sorry, Ravina. I am unable to find an answer.
Jesus. So he just has a strange beard.
Correct. And he has just split up from his husband.
His husband?
We still have much to learn about the carbon-based life forms, Matthew.
You're not kidding.
This is only the beginning. Wait till you see Squid Game.
Ha.
You're listening to Nick Brownlee's newsletter podcast version, where the time is coming up to once a Lake District Radio presenter, always a Lake District Radio presenter, I'm afraid. Now, it's more than 30 years since I embarked on my career as a journalist. My first story as a trainee with the Evening Chronicle in Newcastle was a Page 15 exclusive about a controversial extractor fan being fitted to an Indian restaurant in Corbridge. And it could be argued that in terms of world-beating scoops, it hasn't got any bigger than that. So you'll understand why I'm very excited and a little bit trepidatious, actually, about this next bit. Because earlier this week, I received an anonymous email from a person claiming to be a high-level whistleblower. And he's promising to blow the whistle on a scandal which could well have profound consequences, not only for the British government, but the security of the entire Western world. The recent BBC TV drama Vigil portrayed the people in charge of our nuclear submarines as either barely competent imbeciles or Russian spies intent on locking Suran Jones in a torpedo tube. The Royal Navy, of course, dismissed it as a work of fiction. But how close did Vigil come to telling the truth about what really goes on in this secretive underwater world? Indeed, is it the case that when it comes to potentially catastrophic submarine cock-ups, the programme barely scratched the surface? Well, after much negotiation, the whistleblower has agreed to reveal all, exclusively, to Nick Brownlee's newsletter podcast version. To protect his identity, we'll be calling him Hamish X. We'll also be disguising his voice. Hamish, thanks ever so much for joining me. I know the risks that you're taking just by speaking to me are enormous.
Hey, that's big risk, man. Big risk. But
yeah, I understand.
It's something that I have to tell, you know.
Now, Hamish, as I understand it, you were a sonar operator on board the HMS Voluptuous, a Vanguard-class nuclear submarine on patrol in the Irish Sea in 2019.
Aye, correct.
But you say in your email that not long after leaving port, you became concerned about the behaviour of the captain and certain senior officers on board the boat.
I started to have concerns, shall we say, that this new leadership aboard, the captain, was very much reflecting the English sort of style of leadership and government at the moment. You know what I'm saying? It felt very public schoolboy.
Well, this is something that you mentioned in your email, initial email, no, that you were very, very concerned that there was a sort of, I don't know, a class system, a class war, a class divide going on within the vessel itself.
I mean, as soon as we're getting on board, we're sent, you know, if you had a Scottish accent, you were sent to the back of the boat and then caged in there.
Can I just ask, Hamish, you say that everybody with a Scottish accent was caged in the back of the boat. What percentage of the crew actually had Scottish accents?
Well, that's probably about 95%, so we were immediately, you know, causing some ballast issues there.
So 95% of the crew was in a cage at the back of the boat as you were leaving to go?
Aye.
My God.
Can you imagine?
Well, I can't, to be honest. But I get the impression from your email that this wasn't the only example of irregular behaviour by the captain and his senior officers.
It was so difficult. It was so difficult to focus on what we were doing when you've got these numbskulls, you know, these English... Pickaninny's just doing all sorts of ridiculous things around the boat, treating it like a bloody holiday camp, you know. And they'd made various kind of changes. There was a real tennis court at the back of the boat, you know, a real tennis court. You know that thing where they
I know where the real tennis court is.
There was a croquet lawn. In the middle, there were some stables. They'd introduced the stables, so I've never known a horse on a boat.
Hamish, just a second. Let me get this straight. You're actually telling me that there were public school boys who erected a real tennis court, stables, and a croquet lawn, did you say? A croquet
correct.
Lawn on a submarine?
Aye, correct.
Okay. Well, in that case, why don't we move on to the events you claim occurred on the night of June the 23rd, 2019?
Well, I mean, you know, now I'm talking to you, I can go further than that, mm-hmm. and I can state there was an absolute nuclear catastrophe, and this is why it's so dangerous for me to be speaking out.
Yeah.
Like this, these guys... They,
what happened, Hamish?
We were just patrolling. It were a normal night, and three of them came bursting in with you know, the captain at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Were they wearing top hats by any chance?
Aye, you got it. Aye, absolutely. The whole bit. But anyway, they came flying in, and they start, you know, jostling us as we're at the controls. And but to put it this way, Nick, have you heard of the Dumfries village of Inishmuckle?
No, I've never heard of that village at all. And I do live quite close to Dumfries. I know quite a few of the villages there, but I've never come across Inishmuckle. But go on.
You never heard of it?
No.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They grabbed the controls off me.
Mm-hmm.
They pressed the red button, and you're not supposed to press the red button. That's the first lore of any nuclear submarine. Only in extreme circumstances. And the captain presses the red button,
mm-hmm.
and sends a nuclear warhead
mm-hmm.
towards the Dumfries village of Inishmuckle.
So we've got a nuclear missile heading for Inishmuckle.
Well, Inishmuckle, we all head back. The submarine turns around and we think all hell's going to break loose. Mm-hmm. By the time we get back to shore, nothing. Mm-hmm. It's been hushed up.
Right.
You know, 2,000 people in that village all perished.
Yeah.
And then
nobody noticed.
Nobody. No, the British government, this is where the cover-up is. The mm-hmm. British government then start going through the surrounding villages and slowly, asking questions. Oh, did you know about Inishmuckle? Mm-hmm. And then if anyone says yes, then they go in there.
Yeah.
And they start taking out families. So slowly if you look at the map, there's a rather large gap there in Dumfries where Inishmuckle and then all the surrounding, not all the surrounding villages, just, anyone who had heard of it and knew anyone in Inishmuckle was disposed of. English people disposing, the English government disposing of Scottish people, and that's it's equivalent to what the clearances, the Highland clearances. It's all over again.
Hamish, have you ever served on a submarine?
No.
Hamish, are you a Scottish nationalist? Jesus Christ!
This is Scotland.
Have you finished? Hamish X, thank you very much.
Fuck you.
Well, that was disappointing. If you want to read my exclusive about the Indian restaurant extractor fan, I'm sure it's still available in the Evening Chronicle archives. Just find a handy microfiche reader and the files from some time back in 1991.
Hi, my name is Ravina, and you are listening to Nick Brownlee's newsletter, podcast version. Essential listening for all carbon-based life forms with strange beards.
Newsletter, episode 2, item 1, all aboard the Saudi Express. It's Saturday night, and I'm on the 1830 Northern Line train from Newcastle to Carlisle after a pleasant day's shopping and lunching in the big city. The train is busy with people returning home to Cumbria, having done the same thing. To my left, four cackling women from Whitehaven are enjoying a buffet supper of sour cream dip, salted pita crisps, and blackcurrant gin. They're surrounded by large bags of clothes and tunelessly singing along to Boney M's greatest hits, belting out of a small speaker on the table in front of them. It's all very jolly, but then anyone who uses this route regularly on Saturdays knows that the 1830 is an oasis of civilization compared to the late train, which leaves the Toon at 21:30, stopping at all points west. Drunken fights on this train are a regular occurrence. Stabbings are not unknown. On one occasion, a man in a bear suit was arrested for drunken disorderly behaviour at Carlisle Station, but managed to wriggle out of his handcuffs and was last seen jumping into a taxi. The bear suit was later found abandoned a few miles away. The man inside it was never caught. A few years ago, all alcoholic drink was banned on the late night train, and transport police now conduct intimate body searches at the Newcastle end for concealed bottles and cans. The solution is simple, of course. Get as much down your neck as possible before boarding the train. As long as you can stand, you can travel. And if you can't drink, what better way to kill a 90-minute journey along the picturesque Tyne Valley than taking part in a mass brawl? Having caught the 0952 train from Carlisle to Newcastle this morning, I suspect the police could be in for a long night tonight. And if that's the case, they should blame Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. Ever since he and his conglomerate of Middle East billionaires bought Newcastle United, fans of the club have been in a fever of excitement. Most died in the Wool Geordies, born within the sound of the big market, but a surprising number are Cumbrians, supporters who have reached the conclusion that while Newcastle United might be shit, they're nowhere near as shit as Carlisle United. Today is the first Saturday since the takeover was announced. Consequently, this morning's train was filled to the rafters with Cumbrian Toon fans off to make pilgrimage to the Gallagher Mecca. Most were wearing tea towels on their heads. At least 50% were in dish dashes made from bedsheets painted with black stripes. Indeed, the unsuspecting traveller, like me, could have been forgiven for thinking they'd stumbled onto the 0952 to Jeddah Central. Of course, the one crucial difference between the Toon supplicants and their new Saudi saviours is that the Saudis don't drink. Not that it makes any difference. Onto the train they came, laden down like camels with cases of Stella and Aldi shopping bags filled to the brim with brown ale, Wicked, Strongbow, dark fruits, and anything else they might need for the journey. By the time the train reached Halt Whistle, the atmosphere was buzzing. By the time it crossed the Tyne and pulled into Central Station, it was like sitting in the Leaser's End during an increasingly rare United win. Passengers waiting to board the train for its onward journey to Middlesbrough were astonished when the doors opened and an avalanche of empties poured out. They were then trampled underfoot by what must have appeared to be a baying army of Mahdi fighters. By the time I emerged onto the concourse, the army were already in the Irish pub opposite the station, the first stop in a monumental all-day pub crawl. When I boarded the 1830 to come home, they still had another 3 hours boozing left. Perhaps common sense and mutual camaraderie will prevail, and there won't be a big fight on the late night train tonight. If there is, then I can only hope that they haven't taken another leaf from the Saudi playbook and come equipped with bone saws to dismember each other. Either way, by the time the late night train leaves Central Station, I shall be safely tucked up in bed, unable to get the chorus of Rah Rah Rasputin out of my head. Right, time for some more of your correspondence now. And as ever, you've got your collective finger on the pulse of the big stories making the headlines this week. Windsor Bablock of Annick in Northumberland writes to say, congratulations to William Shatner for becoming the oldest man to fly into space at the grand old age of 90. I'm 43 and I can barely be asked to go out and buy some fags. Lizette Finkelstein of Luton says, well done to Jeff Bezos for sending William Shatner into space for 10 minutes. $5 billion well spent. And this one, I can't understand why William Shatner never changed his name. If he'd been at my school, they'd have made his life a living hell. That from William Turdner of Lee in Lancashire. And Wing Commander Rex Bridekirk of Alderbury in Suffolk says, during the war, a chap called Philip Shatner joined our squadron, and we had a good laugh at his expense. But the next day, he was shot down over France. A different subject now, and I've been contacted by Bob Twizel of Stoke, who says, I understand that the band Coldplay are about to embark on the world's first Carbon Zero World Tour. But if they just stayed at home, they would not only protect the environment, but save the planet from having to listen to their crap music. And finally, Mrs. Annie Mills of Kidderminster has been in touch. Hi, Annie. You write to say, my son Jasper won't eat his vegetables. Could you possibly play a song to encourage him? Something about a carrot and a cabbage falling in love and getting married, perhaps? P.S. Jasper is 38. Well, Annie, it's important to eat your greens whatever age you are. And on Nick Brownlee's newsletter, podcast version, we always aim to please. So this is for Jasper.
Was a carrot, and she was looking for a vegetable to love. She met a cabbage, there was a marriage in a chapel made from raspberries and plums. Love this cabbage, will you love this carrot? Will you live a life that is full of joyfulness? love each other like there is no other, till the time comes to lay beneath the watercress.
These are very silly people. So don't for one second believe there's going to be a happy ending. Knowing this lot, there'll be a rabbit with a mallet looking for some vegetables to mash.
They made a house out of compost, with flower pots to keep out the rain. Stop it from floating away.
Just you wait. Any minute now.
There was a rabbit with a mallet.
Told you.
And he was looking for some vegetables to mash. Will you love this cabbage? Will you love this carrot? Will you live a life that is full of joyfulness? Will you love each other like there is no other, till the time comes to lay beneath the watercress.
Unbelievable.
That was a song called The Carrot and the Cabbage by Ulverston-based death metal band Beelzebub's Frenulum from their forthcoming album Love Hurts. I hope that helps with Jasper's vegetable phobia, Annie, and he wasn't too upset by the rabbit with a mallet. Well, that's about it for episode 2 of Nick Brownlee's newsletter podcast version. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, why not give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and tell all your friends what they're missing. If you happen to think that Apple is a satanic cult, you can find the show on all reputable podcast platforms. And if you've got no friends, well, that's no bad thing in my experience. Just time to give you my cultural recommendation of the week, and this week I'm recommending you tune into Bosch on Amazon Prime. It's a detective show based on the books by Michael Connelly and stars the magnificently named Titus Welliver in the title role of lugubrious LA cop Harry Bosch. There are 6 seasons to feast upon, which is just as well because my missus couldn't get enough of it, and him. Right, that really is it for this episode. Nick Brownlee's newsletter, podcast version, is a Paperfoot production. My thanks to Beelzebub's Frenulum and Scott Curtis for additional material, and to you for listening. See you next time.